Hello, everyone, and welcome to the 7 Steps to Awakening. I just finished watching The Matrix 10 minutes ago. Barely made it, but I'm ready for our movie discussion group, which will follow this. And, of course, as we know, The Matrix is a little bit about being the one, right? And in The Matrix, the only one who is the one is Neo. But here, we all get to be the one. That's a choice that we make. And so I'm going to play a song that's about being the one. It's about following your inner guidance and going as deeply and as honestly as you've always wanted, as authentically, maybe, is the word, as you've always wanted. So, in honor of our movie group tonight and in honor of our true desire, this is one of my favorite songs, Be the One. Great song. So, I have an announcement to make. This is going to be my last 7 Steps teaching, you know, for a while, indefinitely. I am moving the guiding light to the same time frame. So I will still be here at this exact same time on Sunday nights, but instead of doing the 7 steps to awakening, I'm going to do the guiding light, and that will start next week on April Fool's Easter, April 1, both April Fool's Day and Easter. The 7 steps I'm just putting on hold for now. I did put the 7 steps on hold once before, I think around 2013. And then after teaching Inner Ramana, I came back to the 7 steps. So it's possible after finishing the teachings of Ramana Maharshi, which is what I'm going through in the guiding light right now, it's possible that I will come back to the 7 steps. We'll see what happens. But for now, tonight will be my last night. And I'm really happy to have this last night because the last time I shared from the 7 steps, I stopped right in the middle of 808. And so I'm glad to have this opportunity to finish 808 tonight and possibly even 809 before I put the book down for a while. Kathy says she's enjoyed the 7 steps. I'm glad. I've been teaching the 7 steps since 2012. Like I said, I did take a break once before, and I'm taking another break now, but it's been with me for a long time. So let me reread the quote, 808, which is the one we were in the middle of last week. Oh, you know, I should say one more thing before I read the quote. I'm also letting go of ReginaDunAcres.com. The most important audios from ReginaDunAcres.com have been moved. I am done moving them. They have been moved to Awakening Together. And so the way to access ReginaDunAcres is to go to awakening-together.org, click on audios and videos, and you will see Regina DunAcres, and just point at Regina DunAcres, and a side flyout menu will open, and that's where all of the audios are. Today, Phil and I picked a date for blowing up ReginaDunAcres.com, and that date is April 6th. So April 6th is when that website will be taken down, no longer exists. It will be deleted. And what will happen at that on that same date is the web address, ReginaDunAcres.com, will come to Awakening Together to a Regina DunAcres page. So if anybody types ReginaDunAcres.com on in, they'll just be brought to Awakening Together. So, again, April 6th is the date when that website, when we say goodbye to that website. And that website's been there since, I think, 2005, long time. And Phil originally, I don't know if you guys know the story, Phil originally created the website. I didn't even know about it. There was a ReginaDunAcres.com out there, and I didn't even know about it. He was taking some of the postings that I was making on the Peace of God and posting them on ReginaDunAcres.com. Plus, he also was recording me when I was teaching. And all of this without me even knowing about it. And then what happened was I started teaching more and more. And so he contacted me and said, you know, he couldn't keep up with me anymore. And he taught me how to record myself, how to post the recordings, how to post the things that I wrote. So he really taught me, the website skills I needed in order to manage ReginaDunAcres.com. And then he turned it over to me. Yeah, Nancy, all of the Holy Spirit guides have already been moved. Yeah, if you guys just go look at awakening-together.org, look underneath the audios and videos menu, find Regina DunAcres and point at it. You'll see everything there on the side. One of the options is oldies and classics. If you click on oldies and classics, you're going to find Holy Spirit guides and the classics there on the oldies and classics menu. Yeah, so that's what you're going to find. Yeah, you should be able to find everything. If there's something that anyone cannot find, feel free to let me know. There were a few audios I let go of in the move. I thought there were a few audios that I thought, you know what, I'm just going to take the opportunity to drop this audio. But if there is a particular audio that I dropped and people notice I dropped it and they want it back, I'm willing to consider bringing it back. But there were only about 5 audios that I dropped. Almost all of the audios that were accessible through that website were brought over. Oh, and only the most recent inner Ramanas. There were 3 times that I taught inner Ramana. The first 2 times have been dropped. Only the most recent time was carried over. So there were a few things I dropped along the way. Yeah. All right, so let's look at quote 808. The greatest guru is your inner self. Truly, he is the supreme teacher. He alone can take you to your goal, and he alone meets you at the end of the road. Confide in him, and you need no outer guru. But again, you must have the strong desire to find him and do nothing that will create obstacles and delays. And do not waste energy and time on regrets. Learn from your mistakes and do not repeat them. So I'm going to go to the journal and I'm going to go to where we left off. We are ready for 808E. And this is 808E. How does one confide in the inner guru? Confiding in the inner guru is a quiet process. It is looking at what has just been believed or what is being offered for belief with silent watching awareness. It is often followed by self-inquiry, who am I, as a remembrance to step back from the dark and tangled world of make-believe into the clear and free light of day. So obviously, one of the things that we need to do on this spiritual path, this path of letting go of ego, is to learn to stop believing those thoughts that appear to be my thoughts. That's a big part of this job. And the only way I know how to do that is through inquiry. You know, we have seen different methods of inquiry. You all saw that Regina used root cause inquiry. Byron Katie has the work. Choose Again has a process. Michael Langford describes in his book, Man Onessa, the process that he used, which was asking, is this true? Right? Is this true? For me, I found journaling to be the most effective way to question a thought. And I think that that's because I could write the thought down and keep my eyes on it. You know, I don't know if you guys have noticed, but the mind tends to be a bit scattered. And so, if I'm trying to question a thought in the mind, at least for me, maybe some of y'all have a stronger concentration than I do, I couldn't follow the inquiry just in my mind all the way through without the scattering coming in and stealing my train of thought, me losing where I was in the process. With journaling, scattering still sometimes happened. But when scattering happened, what the train of thought I had been following to question the thought was written down. And so I could just reread, find my place, and continue the questioning. So I found journaling to be a really good way to question thoughts. Now the question is, when do you question thoughts? And I think that a good place to start is whenever you're not perfectly happy. Whenever you're not perfectly at peace. Whenever you're not perfectly in acceptance. You know, so if you find yourself upset by something, that's when you go and you look at the thoughts in your mind, that, and you question those thoughts. And you're doing it with the inner guru, by the way. I remember once I read a book, and it's funny, I think I remember the exact page numbers. On page 10 of that book, one of the sentences that I highlighted in the book was that you have to practice forgiveness with what's ever right in front of your face, right? So whatever situation comes up that upsets you, that's what you practice forgiveness with. So I highlighted that sentence. You practice forgiveness with whatever is right in front of your face on page 10. And then when I got to page 24, there was something in the book that really upset me. And I remembered what I had just highlighted 14 pages back. You practice forgiveness with what's right in front of your face. And so I put that book down and I pulled out my journal and I began questioning my thinking that was leading me to be upset by what I had just read. You know, that's just an example of how we do this. Obviously, at least obviously to me, the two greatest obstacles to questioning your thoughts are, one, believing you're right, and two, blaming someone or something else for your upset. So like when I got to page 24 of that book and I read what upset me, if I had reacted in this way, well, the author is just full of crap. That's not right, you know. I know better than he does. No forgiveness would have happened. No questioning of thinking would have happened. We need to really learn that whenever we are upset, there's an error in our own mind. Every time I am upset, there is an error in my mind. Every time I am upset, there is an error in my mind. There's a thought in my mind or a group of thoughts in my mind that I am believing that are wrong, that are false, that are not true. And what I need to do is bring those thoughts to my journal and question them. And what I used to do, you know, sometimes there's like one thought. But sometimes there's a group of thoughts, right? A group of thoughts, all related, but a whole group of thoughts. So when there were a whole group of thoughts, and, you know, my mind was just swirling with chatter regarding the upset, what I would do when I went to my journal is I would start by just writing out each and every thought. I didn't write out any thought twice. In the mind, when it's chattering, it will repeat the same thoughts. So it'll repeat the same thoughts over and over again, multiple times. So I didn't have to write them down multiple times. I just wrote down every thought once. So I would write down the first thought that came to my mind that's upsetting me about this, the second thought, the third thought, the fourth thought, you know, and then is there anything else? Okay, here's a fifth thought and a sixth thought. Is there anything else? All right, yeah, there's a seventh thought, eighth thought, a ninth thought. Anything else? Yeah, there's a tenth thought, an eleventh thought. But eventually I would get to the point where I would say, is there anything else? Anything I haven't seen before? And there wasn't. Right? No, that's basically it. I mean, the mind would go around and say all that again, but no, there's nothing new here. And then I began questioning the thoughts. And I also found that when I wrote down everything from the upset, all of the thoughts that were swirling in the mind, when I got them all down on paper, I also found that I came to a state of not only emptiness, but what's a good word to describe it? Not necessarily clarity, because the clarity came as I moved forward with the questioning process. But peace, I suppose, you know, readiness, peace/readiness as one thing. You know, I don't know if we have a word for it. Peace/readiness is one thing. You know, now I was ready to look. And getting all the upset on paper, I wasn't feeling that emotional upset. I would, you know, beyond the upset, I had this peace readiness to look. Diffused attachment, Kathy is calling it. Yeah, I don't know if there's a perfect word, but when you feel that peace readiness or that diffused attachment, you are with your inner guru. That's the awareness that you are looking with. You may sit there feeling like you're all alone, like it's just you and your journal. But when you reach that feeling in the mind, it's different. The ego was the upset mind. This detached peace readiness, that's the right mind. So you're now going back and you're looking at all of the sentences that you wrote down with the right mind, and you're looking at it with the inner guru, and you will get to clarity. I know that some of you practice this. I know that some of you practice it sometimes. Some of you practice it on occasion, and some of you don't. And of course, each one to their own, I suppose. But I will just say that you will make greater progress if you take the time to question your thinking whenever you are upset. The progress is certainly going to be slow or non-existent if you do not question your thinking, if you just continue to believe your thinking, continue to believe that you are right and someone else out there is wrong. So again, the journal entry says, how does one confide in the inner guru? Confiding in the inner guru is a quiet process. It is looking at what has just been believed or what is being offered for belief with silent watching awareness. And I suppose that peace, readiness, detachment that I just described is the same as this silent watching awareness, right? It is looking at what has just been believed or what is being offered for belief with silent watching awareness. It is often followed by self-inquiry, who am I, as a remembrance to step back from the dark, entangled world of make-believe into the clear and free light of day. Now, I didn't do that initially. And by initially, I mean between the years 2004, when I began to question my thoughts, and 2009. So that's 5 years. The first 5 years, I did not do the second part of that because I didn't know to yet. I only knew the first part. I only knew the writing down of the thoughts and the practicing root cause inquiry. That's all that I knew. And the truth is, that was just a reinterpretation of a business skill that I had learned in the business world. You know, in the business world, I learned how to, if there was a recurring problem in a particular work process or work project, right, then you want to get to the root cause of that problem and resolve it because it's a recurring problem. And so the way we used to do that is we used to practice root cause analysis. It's a specific tool, root cause analysis. You can learn it in the business world. And so what happened when I got on the spiritual path is Holy Spirit for me just kind of reinterpreted a skill that I already had and led me to apply it to upsets instead of recurring problems and processes and projects to recurring problems in my mind, right? To apply it to upsets. And instead of root cause analysis, it became root cause inquiry. And it was just easily translated for me. So it was just taking a skill I already had and using it in a different way. What happened later in 2009, when I started hearing Inner Ramana and practicing the guidance of Inner Ramana, I learned about self-inquiry. So I didn't learn that until 2009. And the way I learned self-inquiry, it was like adding a second step to questioning thoughts. Only by now I had gone through 5 years of purification, and I wasn't experiencing as many upsets. The upsets, when they did occur, were not as complicated. By now my eye, EYE, by now my eye could go right to a root cause. Root causes were no longer mysteries for me. They were revealed. So if I get upset at something, all I have to do is look and I see the root cause. You know, so through practicing root cause inquiry for 5 years and letting go of, you know, all different kinds of believing, I became somewhat of a master at root cause inquiry. And so what the teachings of Inner Ramana did was it took that mastery and it simplified the first step, root cause inquiry, and added a second step. And that's what the little s, self-inquiry, and the capital S, self-inquiry, is. The little s, self-inquiry, was the simplification of the root cause inquiry process after I had become a master at root cause inquiry. And the way that would work is if an upset came across my mind, I would look right at the upset with little s self-inquiry and ask a question. You know, there were a number of questions I could have asked, you know, but I could ask the question, what sees this? I could ask the question, who is this? Meaning, who is it that's speaking? You know, just any question at all that causes me to look at the thought. I've used a number of questions over the years, but the purpose of the question was always the same. The question was to look at the thought from a distance. And so let's say I get upset because, I don't know, this doesn't really happen for me, but I'll just make it up. Let's say I'm trying to meditate and somebody in the house is making some noise and I'm getting annoyed because I'm trying to meditate and they're making noise, right? So here I am trying to meditate and, you know, Ron's making noise and I'm getting upset. So I might even ask the question, who am I? But the first who am I is not about awareness. The first who am I is pointing out that it is the mind that I'm attached to right now. So I might ask the question, who am I, in order to notice, look at me sitting here believing a thought that a noise outside of me can upset me. Yeah, Jamie barks while I'm teaching. Jamie barks while I'm meditating too. You know, look at me sitting here believing the mind, right? It creates that space instantly. Then once that space is created, once I say with the little s self-inquiry, you know, who am I? Or, you know, what's upset? You know, what's upset? Or, you know, what am I believing? Or, you know, any question at all. And I quickly look and I quickly see that, you know, what the problem is. And I quickly see that it's a thought. And I quickly have space from it. Then I ask the second question, which is either who am I or what am I, and I turn the attention around and begin to focus towards the true self on awareness. So the first question breaks the connection to mind. The second question turns the attention around and looks at the true self. I'm picking up the teachings of Inner Ramana right now. Let's see. Self-inquiry is on page 65. So the way I originally learned this is little s self-inquiry is questioning the false I in order to recognize that it isn't truth, it isn't you, it is merely attachment to the mind. As self-inquiry makes the false I self-evident, it is the decision of the true self that breaks the attachment to mind and lays the current story to rest. So that's a simplification of the root cause inquiry process. You know, used to I had to go through this long process to see a thought, rest, accept, and trust with a thought, and all of this before I could let it go. Now I just ask a simple self-inquiry question. What sees this thought? What is thinking this thought? What believes this thought? And boom, the attachment is broken. Then, capital S self-inquiry is different. Capital S self-inquiry is a form of devotion where you incessantly seek the familiar, like seeking the familiar arms of the one you love. And you do not cease the seeking until you find her and are fully in her embrace, assured that you can never lose her again. This is the purpose of capital S self-inquiry. It is seeking for the one you know. Self-inquiry need not take a specific form, right? It is a desire, a devotion that remains awake in you until the goal is satisfied. In fact, self-inquiry has many forms, and one seeker may use different forms at different turns along his path. But one thing is for certain and cannot be forgotten on the path of self-inquiry. One must continually seek the true affection of his love, and he must not stop the seeking until he is certain it has been found. So, capital S self-inquiry can look like, who am I? What am I? It can also look like playing those consciousness games that I introduced while reading The Transparency of Things. There are times that I have used a Ramana Maharshi suggestion, I, just saying I, and letting the attention shift back deeper each time you say that word, I, going back deeper. Of course, awareness, watching awareness, the loving consciousness method of meditation, even the abandon release method of meditation, they are forms of self-inquiry. So, you know, often when people hear self-inquiry, they think of the question, who am I or what am I? And those are certainly two tools that can be used. But in reality, self-inquiry is looking towards the true self. Noticing the true self is what I am. And continuously doing that, repeatedly doing that, until that's perfect knowledge. Until there's no more forgetting, no more straying away, no more believing the mind again. It's perfect knowledge, right? And Ramana continues, both little s self-inquiry and capital S self-inquiry lead in the same direction. The answer and the destination are the same. You may use either or both. As your teacher, I will remind you to question the false attachment to mind, that's the little s self-inquiry, and continually devote yourself to self, which is the capital S self-inquiry. So if we look at this journal entry, we notice that both forms of self-inquiry are here. How does one confide in the inner guru? Confiding in the inner guru is a quiet process. It is looking at what has just been believed or what is being offered for belief with silent watching awareness. That's little s self-inquiry. It is often followed by capital S self-inquiry, who am I, as a remembrance to step back from the dark and tangled world of make-believe into the clear and free light of day. And so I remember at least one of the times when I taught root cause inquiry, I remember saying after you finish the root cause inquiry, you could follow it with who am I or what am I. And that's something that I can teach you, which is wonderful, but I myself didn't even know that much when I was in the root cause inquiry phase. I didn't know that second step yet. So it's nice I'm able to pass it on to you so you can use it at an earlier time in your process than I was able to use it in my own process. So you might, get angry at your spouse, let's say. And you go and you do the root cause inquiry, you know, the long way. You've written down all the thoughts about your spouse, you know, and she did this 5 years ago, blah, blah, blah. And you get them all written down. Anything else? No. And so then you look at all that stuff that's written down, and one sentence in particular jumps out at you. That's really the crux of this upset. So you take that sentence into the root cause inquiry, and you ask, you know, why is this upsetting me? And you get all the way down to the bottom. And what you find is that that you believe you're not in control and you need to be in control, or, and the or is, you know, it really doesn't make sense, but it's kind of like, or I'm going to die, or, you know, it's like, it doesn't make sense. You know, you're not going to die over this argument with your wife, but you find that fear there, that if you're not in control, like, oh my God, you know, there's this fear. Well, then you look at that fear. What do you do with this fear that you have to be in control, or, oh my God, you know, I want to die, right? Well, then you could take it into the capital S self-inquiry, where you look at the fear, you acknowledge this fear, you realize you believe you think you have to be in control, but then you might ask, where is that thought that I have to be in control? And see that it's in the mind. The thought that I have to be in control, or else, you know, I'm going to die, or something bad is going to happen, right? That thought is in the mind. And as soon as you see clearly that that's a thought in the mind, you then ask, what am I? What am I? And you let the attention turn around and look at the awareness. And notice that the awareness is more intimately you than the mind. I mean, the mind feels very, very close. But when you look at the mind and you look at awareness, or be aware of awareness, awareness is definitely closer, right? Awareness is intimately you. It's almost like, if we use the body as an example, it's like the awareness is the body and the mind was just the clothes put on the body, the costume put on the body. And you can see that difference. And so then you realize it's really not even I that believes the thought I have to be in control. That's the mind. I, awareness, in the form of attention and being absorbed into the mind and believing the thought I have to be in control, but it's not true. That's the mind's idea, not my idea. And you just keep looking at these things over and over and over again. And by looking at these things over and over and over again, it's like, in a Ramana says, it's like taking a razor blade and scratching it across a rope. And eventually, you cut all the way through the rope, and the attachment to mind is broken. Yeah, I was looking to see if that was written the same message, but it's not, so I can't read it. But anyway, that's what this particular journal entry is pointing to, is putting those two skills together over and over and over again, just you and the inner guru, until that attachment to mind is broken and you see clearly the truth of what you are. How does one confide in the inner guru? Confiding in the inner guru is a quiet process. It is looking at what has just been believed, or what is being offered for belief, with silent watching awareness. It is often followed by capital S self-inquiry, who am I, as a remembrance to step back from the dark, entangled world of make-believe into the clear and free light of day. So I'm going to move on now to 808F. Still looking at the same quote. Let me read the quote again. The greatest guru is your inner self. Truly, he is the supreme teacher. He alone can take you to your goal, and he alone meets you at the end of the road. Confide in him, and you need no outer guru. But again, you must have the strong desire to find him and do nothing that will create obstacles and delays. And do not waste energy and time on regrets. Learn from your mistakes and do not repeat them. So, 808F says, what leads me to neglect the always available, easy to access inner guidance? Two things come to mind, but I hesitate to put these two things on paper. because I do not feel they are entirely true. They are scapegoats which allow the truth to remain hidden. So again, what leads me to neglect the always available, easy to access inner guidance? The answer: eyes pointed outward on thoughts and appearance. That is all. So I don't know what the two thoughts were that showed up immediately. But what's interesting is intuitively I knew that wasn't it. Whatever those two things were that appeared in my mind, here's why I don't listen to guidance. Intuitively I thought, no, that's not it. You know, if I buy into that, it's like the ego was offering me some suggestions so that I could believe those suggestions and therefore not see the real problem. They were scapegoats or decoys, right? And fortunately, I felt that intuitively. But then notice, all I did was ask the question again. And when I asked the question the second time, an answer arose that felt genuine. So that's kind of an important skill to be aware of that you can use in your own process. Whether you're using root cause inquiry or some other type of inquiry in your journal, if you ask yourself a question, and you feel like the answer that comes isn't, you know, the best answer. You know, like there's something in your intuition just saying, no, that's not it, right? Say, okay, let me ask the question again. Because once you've seen the decoy, it's exposed and it's not going to show up again. At least it doesn't in my experience. And so then when you ask the question the second time, the true answer that was hidden underneath the decoy can arise because you didn't fall for the decoy. So realize there are tricks that can show up in your journaling. And when you journal, you need to journal with intuition. This is why it's that slow, quiet process. You know, you need to be journaling with intuition and you want authenticity, genuineness, self-honesty in your journaling. And so if you feel like something's not quite it, you know, trust that feeling. That's not quite it. Let me ask this question again. And so again, in this particular journal entry, I asked, what leads me to neglect the always available, easy to access inner guidance? Two things come to mind, but I hesitate to put these two things on paper because I do not feel they are entirely true. They are scapegoats. I think decoys would have been a good word too, which allow the truth to remain hidden. So again, what leads me to neglect the always available, easy to access inner guidance? And now here's an answer that felt authentic for me. So I just say the answer, colon. Eyes pointed outward on thoughts and appearance. That is all. That's really what we call attachment. Right? That's attachment. Eyes pointing outward on thoughts and appearance is attachment. And if I am attached, I am going to ignore inner guidance. Because of my attachment. If I want things to turn out a certain way, and you know, then either inner guidance has to, which it wouldn't be inner guidance, it would be ego. Either inner guidance has to give me an answer that gets me where I want to go, or I'm going to ignore it. Right? So what's important then is to have those eyes turned inward instead of outward. And for me, the best way to get my eyes turned genuinely inward, regardless of the circumstance, is to ask, what do I truly want? That has always worked for me. You may need to find your own way of doing that. But by simply asking the question, what do I truly want? Everything in me shifts immediately. So, you know, I could have an attachment to, you know, to my daughter getting a job this summer. She's 21 years old. She's never had a job. And, you know, everybody says that it's going to hurt her when she gets out of college and goes looking for work if she's never had a job. Everybody says, you know, she should get a job. I certainly have passed that suggestion on to Jasmine a few times, but she's not making any move. She's not doing anything, at least not yet, to attempt to get a job, right? If I become attached to the idea that she has to have this job, a job this summer, and she's not doing anything to move in the direction of getting a job, what's going to happen within me? Right? An upset. And so what I would do then in that type of situation is I would ask myself, what do I truly want? And what I truly want is awakening. You know, that clarity of mind that's completely above the battleground. And when I ask, what do I truly want, then the I'm going to call it the lesser desire or the false desire or the decoy desire. There's the word decoy again. The idea that I want her to get a job. It just kind of disappears in the full realization of what I really want. I've often called that question, what do I really want, my true north, you know, like on a compass, right? The compass points north so you know which direction you're going. So when I ask that question, what do I truly want, it's like my true north. Anything that is not what I truly want immediately is exposed as not what I truly want and therefore easily let go. I'm back in line with myself, back in harmony with myself. And then I instantly know how to be because my eyes are no longer pointed outward. They're now pointed inward. And as soon as my eyes are pointed inward, I know, my true guidance, right? I know my true guidance. So, what leads me to neglect the always available, easy to access inner guidance? Eyes pointed outward on thoughts and appearance, or again, we could call that attachment. That's all. And so the correction for me is to notice when I'm attached, and I can tell by the upset, even if it's a tiny upset, there's going to be an upset. And so I ask, what do I truly want, or what do I really want? I think I use the word truly the most. What do I truly want? My eyes go inward. And my guidance is immediately known. That always available, easy to access guidance is known as soon as I turn my eyes inward. So that takes me to 808G. But first, let me read 808 again. The greatest guru is your inner self. Truly, he is the supreme teacher. He alone can take you to your goal, and he alone meets you at the end of the road. Confide in him, and you need no outer guru. But again, you must have the strong desire to find him and do nothing that will create obstacles and delays. And do not waste energy and time on regrets. Learn from your mistakes. And do not repeat them. So, let's look at this last journal entry. I think this is the last one. No, it's not. There's still two more. Okay, second to last journal entry on 808. Listen to this question. You should know the answer as soon as I ask the question. Have I always been perfect at listening to the inner guide? No, of course not. But I pause now to ask, what am I? As I pause and look, I get lost in something that could only be called now. I see my dog nuzzle her nose against the soft pillow-like sides of her bed as she makes herself comfortable. I feel the butterfly-like fluttering of my spiritual heart. I note the endless silence that is present in my very aware mind. My toes are cool. My essence is love. This love is joy. Where is the idea of a me who has not followed the inner guide perfectly? It cannot be found here. Here, my dog's grain whiskers. Here, the sound of the heater. Here, eternal peace holding me, enfolding me as me. So this journal entry was obviously in relationship to do not waste energy and time on regrets, right? And the point of this is, who would have the regrets, right? I mean, if I'm kicking myself in the butt because I, you know, didn't follow guidance to meditate and did not meditate for 3 weeks, and now I'm kicking myself in the butt for getting out of the habit of meditating, I'm identifying with the mind, right? In fact, the I that didn't want to meditate was the mind. I think this is so funny. The I that didn't want to meditate was the mind. The I that said, oh, I need to get this work done instead, was the mind. But now the I that's calling me a loser because I haven't meditated for 3 weeks is still the same mind. So if I believe all three of those thoughts, if I believe I don't want to meditate, I'm identified with mind. If I believe I've got these other things that are more important to do than meditate, I'm identifying with mind again. And then if I believe I'm a loser because I did not meditate, I am identifying with mind again. Nothing has changed. And so the process that I use here is the capital S self-inquiry, just to break that identification. Because let me ask you this. Do you think if I stay in that cycle of identifying with mind, then I'm going to get into a useful, purposeful meditation? I mean, that's not mind's goal, is it? Right? No. So beating ourselves up, bullying ourselves, which I think comes from Nisargadatta this morning, that's just listening to mind. NTI says chastisement, calls it chastisement. We chastise ourselves for our, quote, mistakes. And NTI, speaking with the voice of the Holy Spirit, says chastisement is not of me. Right? So we're in the wrong mind. We're in the ego mind. Whenever we're telling ourselves, even our spiritual practice is not good enough. Right? I'd like to just take a moment to mention what I call a distorted miracle principle. I think that sometimes there is a prompt that comes from genuine guidance, but that prompt passes through the mind and the ego distorts it. So, like, let's say I haven't meditated in 3 weeks and there's just this feeling, you know, to get back into it. You know, come on, get back into it. That's where you want to be. But by the time it goes through the mind, it's you loser, right? So what I need to do is kind of unwrap it, take off the you loser, take off the distortion, and still follow the prompt. Because that's my true heart. My true heart is, you know, that is where I want to be. That is the habit I want to be in. I do want these good habits. This is important to me. So the prompt to meditate is wonderful. But the prompt to beat myself up, to bully myself, to chastise myself, that's the ego. So I let go of the ego wrapping and go ahead and go sit down and close my eyes because I want to, right? Again, I could ask myself, what do I truly want? What's really important to me? And I'll find myself going in and beginning the meditation with the heart and instead of with the, you know, with the switch that comes from the ego. Okay, we have 4 minutes left, and this is my last seven steps teaching, so let me advance to 808H so we can at least finish 808. Here is 808H. Do not get lost in forgetfulness. Do not be lost in distraction. The sound of the pen on paper, observing the mind as it reads and understands. Feeling the feet standing or walking on the floor. This moment is always here in abundance. I love that. This moment is always here, but not just here, in abundance. This moment is always here in abundance. It is perfectly still. It is naturally informed. There is nothing to do but be. Fall in love with being. Fall in love with quiet awareness. Continually. Repeatedly. Fall in love endlessly. Amen. Isn't that cool that my last journal entry for this teaching ends with an amen? I couldn't have planned it more perfectly myself. So, I'm going to take this now as a final reminder, not to get lost in the mind, but to stay with awareness. And I may have told this story before. I used to, back in the olden days, always look forward to my next vacation. And I had a good job where I got about 6 weeks off a year. So about every 2 months, I was able to take a week vacation. And as soon as I got back from one vacation, I would plan the next vacation and then spend 2 months looking forward to it. Very future-oriented in that way. After I got on the spiritual path and a certain amount of clarity came and I began to realize the beauty of the current moment, I realized that's why I loved vacation. Because on vacation, I naturally let go of my mind. I've never been one to carry my work with me on vacation, right? I naturally let go of my mind and I was in the moment. What I really loved was being in the moment. It's just that I only did that on vacation. So now I can be on vacation all the time by simply being in the moment instead of being in the head. So let me just read this final journal entry one last time. And then we'll say goodnight to the seven steps to awakening for a while. Do not get lost in forgetfulness. Do not be lost in distraction. The sound of pen on paper. Observing the mind as it reads and understands. Feeling the feet standing or walking on the floor. This moment is always here in abundance. It is perfectly still. It is naturally informed. There is nothing to do but be. Fall in love with being. Fall in love with quiet awareness. Continually, repeatedly, fall in love endlessly. Amen. And that's it for the seven steps. We say goodnight to the seven steps, and I will be here next week with the guiding light. Bye-bye.